fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Hey friends, I'm Ashley.
Hey you guys.
I'm Lainey.
And this is Haunted Real Estate.
All right. Hello, all.
Hello.
So we are, well, we are I thought first. I was going to record first. So I was like, oh, we're in February. But now that I recorded second, this will be well after Valentine's Day. But we'll be getting into spring by the time this episode comes out. I mean, some of you guys might still be in the dead of winter by the time this comes out. But Texas will be well on its way to spring.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be in our final weeks of maybe some light cold fronts. I think we're mostly...
Watch us have a huge winter storm.
I know. Well, I don't know. I don't know like how accurate it is when they go like far out. But when I was looking at March, it said that it was like 50s to 60s, like not anticipating, you know, Arctic blasts. But I don't know how well in advance they actually know that.
Yeah.
So it's almost spring. So if you listen to part one, you got the lay of the land with Bridgewater Triangle. You know about Hockomock Swamp, and which is the places where spirits walk. You know about King Philip's War and the blood-soaked ground and the sacred wampum belt that vanished somewhere between Massachusetts Swamp and English King's in an English King's vault. You know about the Wampanoag. They called this place sacred, and the English called it cursed or evil. And it's possible both of them are right, but really, it's just a place that should be respected. So, knowing its history only gets you so far, because the Bridgewater Triangle isn't just a story.
Sorry. That was my shoe.
I know.
But it sounded like a toot.
Yes, she's wearing rubber boots. On a very sunny day, too.
It's cold outside. Have you been outside?
I have. I went to church this morning.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm interrupting my own story, but I was out kind of late last night because...
Oh, yeah.
It's my friend Katie's 40th birthday.
Happy birthday,
and Katie. Got a party bus, and I definitely thought when we went to her house at 3:30 for a 4 o'clock pickup time, I was like, oh, okay, this will probably get home by like 7 o'clock. We didn't. I completely misunderstood the entire night. I thought we were going like for cocktails in the woodlands and heading back for some reason. We didn't. We went to like we were by you actually. Like we were in the Heights and then I think in the Montrose area. I kind of lost track of where we were, but in the city.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we stopped at a place and got some cocktails. And then we stopped at a place for dinner. And then we stopped at another place for drinks. And we did not get back until 11. So by the time I got home, I was just like so tired. And I did not expect. It was fun. But I just didn't, and, you know, I didn't prepare my brain and my body for a full night.
Gotcha.
So then, you know, I woke up and was like so exhausted, went to church. Yeah, and then came home. And then, as I told you, I took a long nap under my heated blanket. So
sounds like a long night, but it sounds like
it was super fun. I'm not built for this. I was thinking I'm coming home at like 7 or 8. I even told Reagan we might pick her up from her friend's house. I was like, yeah, we'll probably be able to still get you. If not, you know, have them drop you off at 7:30-ish. And I was like, yeah, girl, I guess I'm going to be like 5 hours past that.
Yeah.
Just wasn't ready. So the Bridgewater Triangle is not just a story about what happened 400 years ago. It's about what's still happening right now. So in the woods behind a Dunkin', in the fog that rolls through a housing development, or in the glow of a streetlight where some creatures are just standing there watching you.
That's creepy.
So for part two, this is the weirdness tour. We're going to talk about the places where the triangle really shows its teeth. And we're going to start at the spot that feels in a lot of ways like the heart of it all, which is the Freetown Fall River State Forest. So the forest sits on the southwestern edge of the triangle. Thick pines and oak and underbrush so dense that you could lose a house in it, and even easier, a person. So it's a state forest, so technically it's public land, which means there are hiking trails and campgrounds and lots of families that come out on the weekends. But it's also a forest with a memory that goes back to war and a reputation that has only grown in modern time. Local law enforcement and park rangers have been dealing with the reports for decades that don't fit usual state park problems, like graffiti and litter. There are animal carcasses, it's not roadkill animal carcasses or hunting remains. Mm-hmm. It's animal carcasses that have been laid out in patterns, throats cut, arranged in circles or on stone altars, evidence of maybe cult activity. Candles melted into the rocks, symbols painted on the trees, and sites that get cleaned up and then reappear a month later somewhere even deeper in the woods.
I feel like that could still be people just being dicks.
It could be. It could be, yeah, like ritualistic activity, or it could just be like, I mean, we hear of even true crime stories where they're like kind of fake being ritualistic, but yeah, they're like, oh, let's like sacrifice something. Just, I don't know. I don't understand humans, if I'm being quite honest.
Yeah, for real.
But there are also human bodies. And so this is what we might hit. I'm not going to do it right after this, but when and if I do a part three, which I probably will, we'll talk more about some of the true crime type things. But there are, of course, human bodies found in the forest. It is a dumping ground for either murder, but sometimes suicide. Rangers have found people hanging from trees, shot and left in shallow graves, or people that just went into the forest and never came out.
That's so sad.
That's sad and scary. The thought that you could go in and just like nobody knows what happened to you. Like, I at least want people to know what happened to me, no matter what happens.
I know.
It just leaves that air of mystery. Like, are they even alive? Did they come out on a different side of the forest and like change their name and their lives? And like, what happened?
That's what you hope.
I mean, do I? That'd be terrible too. Like, if you did that to me, it'd be pretty terrible.
It would, but at least I'd be alive, but you wouldn't know it. So...
If you freaking just left and was like, yeah, changing my name and made me think you were dead, I might make you wish you were dead if I found out you were still alive. I wouldn't be like grateful about it. I'm pretty sure I'd be an asshole about it.
That's my plan.
Just telling you now.
Okay.
So the official reports note the practical challenges, search dogs that lose scent trails, helicopters cannot see through the canopy of the forest, and the swampy grounds swallow a lot of evidence. So the unofficial stories talk about something else. Searchers often feel watched. They hear voices calling from the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. Direction and equipment that keeps failing for no reason. But what is true is the forest is not only haunted by ghosts, it's a place for human darkness as well. The war, the murders, the rituals, there's layers on top of each other. And when you walk through the trails, you're walking through all of them at once. Like all these different things, these historical things, these energies, things like that. One specific spot inside the forest is Profile Rock. So Profile Rock is a massive granite ledge that juts out of the forest, and its contours form a rough weathered look that looks out over the surrounding woods.
So like a profile of a face?
That, I think Anawan Rock was the one that's more of a profile of a face.
Oh, okay.
Which actually they sort of, I think they kind of look out over each other. I'll get there in a few minutes.
Okay.
So we talked about this a little bit in the last episode. So there are some nights when the forest just goes completely silent, and then there can be a figure sitting on the rock, legs crossed, arms outstretched, waiting, watching.
He's like this?
Yeah. Yeah, like that's kind of like you're worshiping.
Oh, okay.
How are you thinking it? Like his
legs crossed?
Like crisscross applesauce.
Oh, got it.
Is the appropriate way to say it now Native American style, you know?
No.
They used to say Indian style, but we don't say that. So now we just say crisscross applesauce.
Yeah, let's just stick with that.
Okay, so he was sitting like a Native American might.
Okay.
With his arms out. So many people over the years have reported seeing it from the trail below, just this dark silhouette against the lighter stone, just being perfectly still. The figure is usually only seen for a moment, and then once you do a double take, it might be gone. Or if you look away to get someone's attention to point it out, it won't be there anymore. This is what people say is the apparition of Anawan. If you remember from part one, that's Metacom's war captain, who was captured and whose spirit, according to many retellings of the story, is waiting for the lost wampum belt. So others believe it may be Metacom himself, or maybe it's the spirit of the land itself keeping watch over what's been taken. So if like this, if the land spirit had a figure, like it would be this, because it's actually not like a defined face or anything like that. It's just like a dark shape of a man.
Okay.
And that's it. So there's no like, oh, that's clearly what, you know, Anawan or Metacom looked like. Like we, well, I mean, we don't know, but.
I'm so glad that I forgot about Metacom just so I could hear it again today. I love that name. It's going to be my next boy dog.
I was going to say it should be your next boy dog. That's funny. Yeah, Maxine and Metacom.
Oh, so cute.
That's cute. I don't know how Maxine would handle having a sibling dog. You might need to wait till Maxine is no longer to get a male dog.
Maybe.
I don't know how she would handle it.
I don't either.
So whoever this figure is, it never seems to be hostile in any way, just patient. One report that I found on Spooky South Coast was a man who was walking his dog in the late 80s, and he was looking at profile rock, and a figure slowly appeared on top of it, faint, and then it became more solid. The figure was pretty much exactly like the reports we've heard, a figure of a man who was standing, arms extended outwards, brought his hands back to his chest, and then sat back down, and then the figure gradually faded away. So the witness said that the dog stopped dead and also stared at the exact same spot, totally locked in to watching, like it was watching the same thing the person was seeing. The witness said none of it felt like a threat, but it actually felt like deep sadness, like the figure was grieving and the onlooker could just feel it too. So now it's not believed that the spirit in this place is ever really threatening. There's really not any reports. Well, I'll tell you like some that are a little bit more scarier than others, but I think there's a reason for it. Mm-hmm. But it has a more protective element because there was another story from the 90s where a teenager was out near Anawan Rock, not Profile Rock, on Halloween with the intent to scare people, hiding in the woods and making sounds and then like popping out at passersby. But instead, he and his friend set a large red ball of light, or this large red light was sort of shaped like a man, appeared in the trees, and then it rushed towards them, radiating intense heat. So they bolted from the woods and then refused to ever go back. So folklorists have pointed out there's many types of reports with similar things of lights, fires that vanish, heat, pressure in the air. The same kind of reports come from Profile Rock as well. So it's believed that there's a connection and it's symbolic because they, quote, look at each other from across the battlefield, end quote. So some writers and local investigators explicitly say that Profile Rock and Anawan Rock feel like a pair. Two points in the landscape where the spirits of Metacom and Anawan, or at least the emotional residue of their defeat, are still active. So the idea is that grief and betrayal attached to those last days of war may be why sightings at Profile Rock often leave people with a profound sense of sorrow instead of fear. Like they're just kind of walking in the spirit of someone's mourning.
Oh.
So I do think it's more of like that protective spirit, though. That's why like the ball of light came at those kids, because those kids were kind of like up to no good. But in general, it's like never trying to hurt anybody.
Yeah.
So the next part of our story takes us to Huckamuck Swamp, where we discussed in the last episode its history and bloodshed near this area. And during the day, Huckamuck looks very peaceful, vast wetlands, herons, cattails, and the occasional canoe. But at night, when the fog rolls in thick to hide the tree line, the swamp changes. So people who live near here or venture into it after dark report a persistent feeling of being watched, like even the water itself is aware that they're there. So there are many sounds reported from Huckamuck as well. Drumming that you cannot pinpoint exactly where it's coming from.
Oh, I hate that.
Which reminds me of like a home smoke detector where it's like you can't figure out where it's originating from, yet it's coming from everywhere around you.
Yeah.
Like it's the exact same sound no matter where you are. That's kind of what the drumming is. You can never really find the source. People have explored. They've tried getting closer to where they think it's coming from to find nothing. And it's always the same distance away, no matter how fast or slow you're going. But some have also heard voices too. So usually not in English. It's in a language they don't typically recognize. They're chanting or calling it a rhythm that matches the drumming.
Oh, it's so creepy.
It is. I love drums, but drums also have a way of, because like, you know, like a lot of drums were used in battles.
Yeah.
So it's like kind of sad to think about, like you might be hearing like the remaining energy of battlefield drumming, which then is very ominous.
Yeah, it is.
I like drums in like a good rock show.
Yeah.
But It would not be the same kind of drumming, I don't think, in war. So then there's also orbs. Lots and lots of orbs. So the swamp is infamous for glowing orbs that rise out of the wetlands. White or blue, sometimes maybe orange, and they can change color as they drift, which is kind of interesting. Like, is it a mood orb? Is it changing based on, like, good or bad energy? Or, like, because a lot of these orbs, and it's really interesting, they're discerning orbs. It's like they're examining people. That's how they get reported. So these orbs are not like regular swamp gas, which can emit a kind of light. And it's not like distant headlights. They hover. Sometimes they pace people along the shore. And so they'll kind of like follow you a little bit.
Yeah.
They dart ahead. They wait as if they're curious or trying to lead somebody deeper into the channels. Witnesses describe them as intelligent, responding to shouts or flashlight beams. Sometimes they vanish when you get too close. Sometimes they split into two and circle each other before emerging again. I said emerging, but I meant just merging.
I got it.
Sorry. One story from a Reddit user who grew up near the swamp sums it up. They were walking their dog at dusk when an orb the size of a basketball floated out of the reeds, stopping about 10 feet away and just hung there, pulsing softly.
Ew.
The dog froze and refused to move. The orb stayed there for about 30 seconds and then drifted back into the fog and disappeared. The Reddit user said it felt like they were being examined by the orb, like it was deciding if they belonged here or not. And this is the swamp's energy. Not really malevolent, but discerning. Mm. Like we said, it's been a burial ground, a war base, and a sacred site. Like, it never really forgets. So the weirdness is not confined to the woods or just the swamp. It also bleeds into the town as well.
Great.
So the people living in the homes on the edge of the triangle in places like Raynham, Taunton, Bridgewater itself report poltergeist-like activity.
Ew.
That seems to follow a pattern. Objects move on their own, drawers open and closing, footsteps on stairs where no one is there. One house near the Brockton line, a family reported that their kitchen cabinets would swing open at 3 a.m. every night like clockwork for 3 weeks straight.
What?
I don't know what it is about the number three that's just weird.
It's... yeah, I have no idea. But I can't imagine, like, waking up to get a glass of water and, like, getting smacked in the head by...
Oh, I know. Did you ever watch Paranormal Activity 2?
Yes.
Do you remember the scene where she's in the kitchen and, like, all the cabinet doors flies open and the pots fall?
Yeah, I just got goosebumps.
Yeah, that scene freaks me out because you're just, like, watching her closely waiting because it's, like, if you haven't seen Paranormal Activity Part 2, you know, it's done from, like, the perspective of, like, the home cameras... or the security cameras. And so, you know, you're like looking closely because security cameras aren't always the best footage. And you're like, what am I about to see? But you don't expect. It's like the whole room kind of like explodes in a way. And it's very unsettling and startling.
Yeah. I would immediately start crying and run away.
Yeah. That scene always gets me now. Because then now, obviously, I know what's going to happen. But you're like, timing wise, I don't really like remember exactly when it's going to happen. I'll tell you what. The first three paranormal activities really freaked me the fuck out.
Yeah, they're super scary. I haven't seen... I read about the newer ones and, like, the story stops kind of making sense.
Yeah, it did. It did. Yeah, I didn't continue to follow them because it's, like, the same family for the first three. It kind of goes down.
And it's the most same of the demon.
Family line. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, like, a demon that's after the daughters. But they're each a prequel to the other one, right?
No, because the first one...
Okay, wait, hang
happens
on.
After...
Oh, it's not completely after. There's an overlap.
There is.
So it's like a prequel for the first most of the movie, and then it picks up where part one is.
Yeah.
And then part three is when the sisters are little kids and how it kind of starts.
I didn't see that one, I don't think. I think I only watched the first two.
Oh, I liked it.
Yeah.
It's still pretty creepy.
It is. It's so crazy how cheap that movie was to make and how much money.
Oh, I know.
Like, I think it made
honestly,
the
you
money.
Should watch it. I kind of felt like the third one had, because it explains it, almost feels like more evil. And you see how the demon originates.
Ew.
Like, why it started with those sisters.
What did they do?
I mean, is it a spoiler? I don't know. When movies are, like, that old, can you just spoil it? It's their grandma.
What?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, she's like summoning, I forget her purpose for it. Now I'm going to have to rewatch it, but she like summoned this. She's like a witch.
Oh, gross.
And she like summoned it to like take, take the firstborn son, and her daughter only had daughters. So it had to go to one of, like, when the sisters, like, had kids, that's why it was after, like, the baby, because that was the firstborn son.
Oh.
And that's what the grandmother had, like, promised it.
That's so, yeah. Creepy.
I think that's how it happened. So it's super creepy. And what a bitch.
Yeah, fuck you, grandma.
Gah.
That's nasty.
The one thing I remember from little Nikki is, like, Hitler had a pineapple up her butt. Up his butt. I'm sorry, not her butt. And I don't know why. That's always my interpretation of hell. And I'm like, I hope she has a pineapple up her butt in hell, you know?
Yeah. That's so funny. That's such a dumb movie.
It is a dumb movie, but it's kind of what I hope hell is like for, like, the worst of the worst. Like,
yeah,
I hope you're walking around with a pineapple up your butt.
Real.
But yeah, she's on that list too. So anyway, so the cabinets were opening at 3 o'clock in the morning, like clockwork, 3 weeks in a row. And they even tried, like, locking the cabinets, and they would still fly open at 3 a.m. So I don't understand energy.
Yeah.
Long back roads, especially the older two lanes, stretches that cut through the forest. Drivers report, and you know, shadow figures, like, always get me. There's a lot of shadow figures that are talked about, especially on the back roads, where I understand it's easy to not really know what you're seeing. And there are weird shadows that happen, you know, especially when you're driving or it's, like, weavy and things like that. You know, you're going to hit, your light's going to hit certain things. So you're going to get weird shadows.
Yeah.
But man, back roads, forest at night, it's not for me.
No.
Like, I'm a spooky loving gal, but I don't want to put myself in real positions where forests are so mysterious.
They are.
I don't know what lives there. It could be some just regular murderer. It could be any creature your imagination can conjure up. Like, yeah, it could be anything in a forest. Or very realistically, I don't even want to do it because of deer. Like, something that's not necessarily... Yeah. You know, deer kill, like, a good amount of people each year.
Yeah.
And people kill, obviously, a good amount of deer each year, too. Not trying to overshadow the deers here.
Yeah. Wait, I have a question about paranormal activity.
Okay.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
What did the grandma get in return for giving the son...
I don't remember.
...the demon? Like, why
would you... I think it was, like... I don't know if it was, like, powers or what it was that she was getting out of it. I don't remember.
Okay.
But, yeah, we should definitely pop on part three and learn together.
Okay, maybe later.
Okay. Well, yeah, not right now. We're recording.
Another time.
So, yeah, drivers report the shadow figures stepping out from the tree line. And they're usually, like, just at the edge of headlights. And you can't really move your headlights, you know, unless you want to go driving off the road. So it's always, like, just where the headlights are meeting it. Tall, dark, and then no clear features. They kind of vanish when you get too close. So some people slam on their brakes, of course, because they think they might be about to hit somebody, or, like, is it a large deer coming out, or just, yeah, some animal coming out of the forest and they don't want to hit it. But then the road is completely empty. So others keep driving, but then they feel like they're being watched for several miles. Which is also creepy because I kind of feel like the forest is watching you.
Yeah, me too.
Whenever I drive through Sam Houston State Park, there's a way you can, like you, I mean, you can probably do this with a lot of forests, but you can see so much of the tree line. Like, when you're looking at it, you feel like you can see so much of the forest.
Yeah.
I always feel like I'm looking at it, like, waiting for something to come, like, lunge out at me.
That's what I always think when I pass trees, like, yeah. Try not to let my brain go there, but if I stare too long, I'm like, what's gonna pop out at me?
Yeah. Where bus would pick her up, it is in kind of, like, a dense, it's not like a big forest, it's pretty small, it's probably like an acre, but it's, like, still a dense 1 acre over on the street past us, and we'd have to park our car right there and, like, wait for the bus, because I'm like, I'm not sending, it's two streets away, so it's, I understand some parents, like, might think we're coddlers, okay, but at the same time, bus picks up really early, and at this tree line, it just really creeps me out, so I'm just like, nah,
yeah,
we're gonna drive you over here, and we're gonna wait, and her and I would always stare into the forest and be like, this forest is, like, so creepy, even though it's very small, it's very dense, scary. You can't see through it.
Yeah.
So then there's also balls of fire. So not like the swamp orbs, but flame-like lights that appear over fields, over neighborhoods, and sometimes just hovering above a house.
That's creepy.
That is creepy. Like, floating over a house is especially creepy, and you wonder, like, why did it choose that house?
Yeah.
Or did it just stop over there, but the house has nothing to do with it? I'd feel chosen, but not in a good way.
Look at your grandma. She probably did it.
Man, did, You're just really gonna harp on paranormal. It did. It's your grandma. Oh, that's funny. So they're described as mostly like grapefruit sized spheres of orange or yellow fire that hang motionless for minutes. And then they shoot off very quickly or just completely blink out. So they're often reported in clusters of three or four at a time, moving in a formation, then scattering. And then some people connect them with UFOs. So some people claim these are a lot of like UFO type sightings because of how fast or like strangely they move. Mm-hmm. Others think of them more as like ghosts. So it's really hard to say, but the effects are the same. A light behaves like it's thinking, making decisions, and then not following any kind of physics that we've ever learned, which is what people say about, you know, UFOs, alien ships. Like they move in ways that don't make any sense with like physics the way that we know it.
Yeah.
So now one of the weirder often reported elements of the Bridgewater Triangle, of course, is the cryptids. And I would like to go more into the cryptids in a part three. But the triangle has a long history of Bigfoot type sightings, large bipedal covered in dark hair, walking through the forest with a type of walk that doesn't look like, you can't say it's a bear because it doesn't walk.
It's your grandma.
It's probably your grandma. I feel like we're doing like a your mom joke. Oh, that's your grandma. Yes.
Okay. I'm done. I don't like your mom jokes.
So often in Hukamuk, hikers in Freetown Fall River have seen something tall moving between the pines, only to find there's no tracks, no scat, or any sign that anything large was ever there. So very mysterious creatures. Then there have also been a lot of reports of what people claim is like a black panther with red glowing eyes. And not like regular cougars, but like full-on panthers, like something out of the jungle spotted in the woods or even along the highways. So one report from the early 2000s had a driver on Route 44 near, this got misspelled, so now I don't know which one I meant. I think it was Rehoboth. Rehoboth? It like gets a town.
Oh.
Slamming on the brakes because a panther walked across the road and it turned its head and the eyes were lit up like taillights.
Oh.
Other noteworthy creatures are giant snakes and large aggressive dogs that don't match any kind of like known breeds.
That's scary.
The snakes are described as thick as a man's thigh, black and moving with a speed that seems unnatural for something that size. The dogs are often usually seen in packs. Sometimes they surround a car on a back road. They stare into the car without barking.
Oh.
And then they vanish in the woods like nothing. Like nothing really happens, but they're like examining again, something else examining, discerning. And then they just, it's like they're coming out to investigate and then they go back into the woods to report back like what they saw.
Who are they reporting to?
Yeah, who or what?
Yeah.
So this one is also pretty curious. The Thunderbirds, which are enormous birds, sometimes described as having a 20-foot wingspan and beak, like eagles and feathers that gleam in the sun, and they're usually spotted circling over the swamp or forest, sometimes diving low enough that people have to, like, duck down, and then they're like, what the hell was that? Some descriptions sound like a pterodactyl with leathery wings and no feathers, and they have a long beak full of teeth. So what's weird about the Thunderbirds is they kind of all get reported at the same time and then they stop. And then years later, there's going to be reports again of all these Thunderbirds and then they stop. So that is weird. There's not a consistency with the Thunderbirds. They seem to just show up every few years and then kind of go away again. So
where they go?
Something about that makes it seem more real to me.
Yeah.
Like there is a consistency that multiple reports will come in on them, which brings some validity to it. And then nobody reports on it for years.
Yeah. That's weird.
That's weird.
That's weird.
So the triangle, kind of like we talked about earlier, has also been a UFO hotspot since at least the 1970s. When Lauren Coleman first mapped it, reports of common clusters with bright lights hovering over the swamp, structural crafts with windows and seams, sometimes triangular or cigar-shaped. They move silently and at low altitude. So they are often seen near power lines that cut through the forest or over the old Norton Reservoir or just above the treetops on Route 44. So one of the more famous incidences happened in 1979 when multiple witnesses in Rehoboth, I'm not positive how to pronounce that, so I'm already sorry, reported a large silent craft hovering over a field, beams of light scanning the ground, and then shooting straight up and vanishing within a second. I said within a second, and I wrote without a sound, so I had a brain glitch just now. They vanished without a sound.
Okay.
So the descriptions were consistent enough that local police filed a report, even though there were no explanations. Nobody knew what that was. Some, and I want to go back to this being in the 70s. That was 1979. A lot of weird things were happening during the Cold War era.
Yeah.
Primarily related to UFOs, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because we were in the midst of the space race. So I always have so many questions and feel like there were so many like government experiments at that time.
Yeah.
So some researchers and locals have started calling the triangle a window area or portal, which we hear a lot with the triangles, which makes them so interesting.
Yeah.
So a place where the boundaries between dimensions or between the worlds are thin, which makes sense as many people across the world believe that triangles have some sort of portal theory and it helps explain the weird happenings there. It just attracts the weird. So some people keep it simple and say UFOs are just UFOs, unknown crafts passing over. So literally unidentified flying objects, not necessarily related to aliens, or maybe they are.
Mm-hmm.
UFOs just somehow became the name we gave an alien vehicle, even though it really just means unidentified flying objects, which could be human related too.
Yeah.
So the regions that happen to have a lot of stories attached to it, others lean into the folklore and say all of this is connected. The sacred swamp, the curse of King Philip's war, the cult rumors, the ghosts, the cryptids, and the lights in the sky. The Bridgewater Triangle is a window area, a kind of energetic weak spot in the world, which this is what I think does make sense with the triangles. It's an energetic weak spot in the world where things slip through. Maybe the trauma of the land tore something open. Maybe the Wampanoag were already working with a doorway that they understood and the rest of us are just now noticing it. Maybe all those rituals, good and bad, left the fabric there very thin. So that's why you get strange overlaps and reports of lights that start out looking like classic swamp orbs, and then they move like structured craft UFO sightings, where people also hear drumming from the woods. Nights when somebody sees a giant bird and somebody else a few miles away sees a triangle of lights hovering over the tree line. It starts to feel less like separate categories. Ghosts over here, aliens over there, and more like the same fault line showing up in different ways, which I think that's interesting. Like a lot of different people are seeing different things are happening or different things are being reported, but multiple things are kind of happening around the same time. And in that context, that does feel very plausible. So for people who live there, the fault line runs right under ordinary life. You can be walking your dog past a strip mall or driving home from a late shift and look up and see a silent object hanging over the highway or a set of lights hovering over the swamp. Where if you believe the old stories, spirits have always gathered. That's the real creep factor of the Bridgewater Triangle's UFOs. Not just the strange things in the sky, but they show up in a place that already feels like it's holding on to too many secrets. So when we stack it all together, the swamp's lights that move there, they are thinking, they are figures in the rocks, creatures that don't belong in New England, and the silent craft hanging over the tree line, you can start to see why people say that the Bridgewater is holding on to too many secrets. This isn't just one ghost in one house. It's a whole region where the strange keeps showing up in different costumes. And all of this is happening right on top of regular life. Like we said, kids are riding their bike past the woods. People walk their dogs in the back roads. Sometimes nothing happens. Sometimes you're just hanging out and all of a sudden you're going to hear drums or see lights or catch something impossible in the headlights. And then they have to decide whether they're going to tell anybody or not, because you're probably going to feel crazy. Like Lainey and I did with our freaking shared weird ass experience that I'm just going to be messed up for the rest of my life.
Me too.
So we hit the obvious chapters, Huckamuck Swamp, Freetown Fall River, Profile Rock and the Orbs, some of the cryptids and UFOs. But there are lots of stories tucked into the triangle that we have not even touched yet. Old quarry ledges, where people see someone standing on a ledge and feel a sudden urge to jump. So like suicidal feelings when those weren't there before. Hitchhikers on Route 44 who vanish from the side of the road or sometimes get in the car and then suddenly vanish from the passenger seat. And then true crime cases that ended up with with bodies in the same woods. So for those, we will wait another day.
Well, I'm excited for that.
Yeah, we'll wait for another day, not like wait till tomorrow. Like, don't be waiting for tomorrow for a story. So for now, think about what it means to live there, to buy a house or open a business in places like this, where on paper, it's just southeastern Massachusetts. But once you know the history and the stories, it's hard to wonder what else you'll be sharing your property with.
Could you imagine if you bought a house without doing any research and like,
no,
you're in a triangle?
No.
That sucks.
Like, I might be in a triangle. We just haven't defined it yet. Who knows? Because I'll tell you, weird shit happens here.
Yeah, that's very true. But at least it hasn't been researched and discovered. Those people are just dumb that don't look into it before they buy.
I really want to ask my neighbors if they have any like weird experiences, because if I'm having weird experiences here, I really cannot imagine that like we would be the only one.
Yeah.
Like, I need to know. So we haven't done it in a long time, but I added two arbitrary anecdotes.
Oh, yay.
So the triangle itself isn't ancient. So the stories and history go back centuries, but the name Bridgewater Triangle only dates back to the late 70s and early 80s when cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman, whose name I mentioned earlier, drew it out and popularized it as Massachusetts's answer to Bermuda Triangle. Mm. And then this one I would like to look into if I can find any information. There is a boulder called Dighton Rock. Once it was in the Taunton River. Mm-hmm. It's covered in mysterious carvings. Over the years, people have suspected it was carvings left by Native Americans or Vikings or other ancient explorers. But it definitely adds to the mystery and theories of the Bridgewater Triangle.
Interesting.
So with that is part two of the Bridgewater Triangle, of some of the strange and weird unexplained. Lots of Facebook, Reddit, Instagram stories out there for you to dive into.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yep. So I think part three, we can dive into like some more specific details. There's just kind of a lot to cover with it. But anywho, there will be a part three that we'll probably do a little bit further down the road after Lainey and I's weird shared experience that we talked about a few episodes ago. I am going to go into a world of skinwalkers probably, because I'm interested in that.
Do you think it was a skinwalker?
So
I don't like to think.
Do you think it was a skinwalker?
Sorry.
I don't know. I really don't.
I don't like to think about it.
I was sitting there like, so first off, I like to talk to Perplexity. That's why I shared the experience with Perplexity. I'm like, what does this sound like? And what can you find of like a similar experience? And first off, Perplexity seemed most perplexed by the fact that you and I had a shared exact experience in the same space.
The same space, just like a year and a half apart or two years apart.
Yeah. So that is really weird. And you never told me about it. So it's not like you told me and then I like manifested it or like freaked me out. So then I had a shared experience. Like, we didn't know each other had that experience, which makes it even weirder. It did say something about like skinwalkers being able to kind of channel into your mind a little bit. Mm-hmm. But there were some things that it was like, not so much a skinwalker, but like, I can't remember. Now I think it came off as almost more witchy. So I don't know, maybe there's a spirit of a witch in my backyard. Who knows?
That's so creepy. In her backyard, guys, it's when it's dark.
It's dark.
It looks endless. Like, you wouldn't know that there's a road just a street away, but it looks like a vast forest in the dark.
That's what I liked about it.
I know.
It's just weird. So when I told our sister Megan, about it, she brought up skinwalker. And I was like, that's actually really weird you're saying that, because for a long time, like when Casey and I would sit outside and stuff, like there was one night where I swore I kept seeing something moving, but it's like I couldn't see something moving. I just felt like I was seeing something moving. So I'm saying that like maybe I did. But first off, when I'm with Casey, who's like kind of a non-believer with a lot of paranormal things, I'm really an audience of one, because I'm like, oh my gosh, this is really creepy. This is freaking me out. And he's like very dismissive of it.
Yeah.
So in a way it calms me down, because nobody's like fueling my fire here. So I'm just like, okay, well, sure. I guess it's in my head. But I told him multiple times. I'm like, there's a skinwalker back here. There's a skinwalker. And then Megan said that. And that's why I started going down a skinwalker path. And I asked Perplexity, I'm like, is this a skinwalker? And it's like, reports. I have to tell Perplexity first off, I'm like, believe in skinwalkers for a minute. Well, like when we're when I'm asking you this question, like I don't want to be gaslit by my AI and it's like skinwalkers aren't real. But it is interesting because skinwalkers come from Navajo folklore, which is very like Western United States. It's not really, I don't, we're kind of in that like weird middle part being in Texas.
Yeah.
But it is way more like in Utah and things like that. Like that's where Skinwalker Ranch is. And so you hear a lot more of those stories there. You don't hear as much with, skinwalkers like in the middle of the U.S. or on the East Coast, you don't hear as much.
Duh, that video I sent you, that's definitely AI.
Yeah.
But it's so still creepy. Yeah. It was like
creepy.
It seemed like it was a farm out in Utah or something.
Yeah.
And this tall, gangly creature comes up and fucks with the dogs or the chickens.
I think it's coming up to the chickens, but the dogs are like stopping it from getting a chicken.
Yeah. And it's definitely fake. It's AI, but it looks so scary.
It does look scary because it's still in the footage of like a nighttime cam, which just looks creepier because it's like very light against the dark and just, it's very eerie.
Yeah.
The desert also has a way of being about equally creepy to a forest because there's not a lot of, like a forest, it's low population in a desert. So it's so vast and unexplored. Yeah. You know, there's so many parts of a desert that has no roads. And so imagine the things that can live out there and get away with being there because you're not going to find it.
It's so scary.
Yeah, it's all freaky. I imagine like caves and things like that in deserts could have really weird things living in it that we just haven't even found yet.
I hate that.
Yeah.
I hate that with every inch of my soul.
Yeah. Seems. So maybe, maybe we can do like a combined episode soon where we're discussing like different creatures like that in different parts of the United States.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah. Okay. We'll talk about that. Yeah. Maybe that'll be our next episode.
Okay.
We'll take a part of the United States and go into like the cryptids and weird things of that part of the United States. Because dang, y'all on the Pacific coast, y'all got some wigger shit.
Yes.
So I would like to learn more. Okay. So if you would like to send us a recommendation or interesting real estate story, you can email us at hauntedrepod@gmail.com. Make sure to go follow us on Instagram at haunted.real.estate. And please, if you could rate and review us on your preferred podcast platform,
would
be so appreciative. Yeah. And that is about it. Thank you guys. And let's just get into spring. I'm ready for a little sun.
Yay.
Not freezing weather.
I'm not over the freezing yet, but
I mean, I like being inside when it's cold, but like last night, I mean, it was pretty chilly being outside and it was windy.
Yeah.
I just was craving my heated blanket the whole time.
I understand.
And there wasn't heat in the bus, so it was a little chilly in the bus.
There wasn't any heat?
No. I mean, it was definitely warmer than outside, but they had told us the day before the heater was broken. I was like, okay, that's so great on a night where it's going to be 26.
Yeah, I'd be bringing like a sleeping bag.
Yeah. So anywho, y'all have a great rest of your February and stay spooky, my friends.
Goodbye.